is a special report.
Knowing how to invest your money is harder than ever before. Dealing with stock market volatility, record debt, and terrorist attacks requires new thinking. At U.S. Asset Management, we can help you see the world more clearly so that you can move beyond the chaos and invest with confidence. Call us, visit us online, or drop by our office. U.S. Asset Management, helping you make better decisions with your money.
Psst. Your government doesn't care about you. That's why you need a medical emergency kit. It contains life-saving medications like ivermectin, Z-Pak, and antibiotics. Stock them before they block them.
Hi, everybody. I'm Christine Dolan, and this is our Globalist in Plain Sight show today. And happy Father's Day to all the fathers out there. And I'm honored today to have Dr. Ron Scott with us. Welcome to the show, sir.
Great. Thanks, Christine.
So everybody wants to know what in God's name is going on across America, because we people from the outside think we've all lost our minds, and it's more than just COVID. So today we're going to have a history lesson and take people back, because Ron, tell us what you think is going on here.
Well, in simple terms, Christine, it's a cultural revolution, and very similar to what happened in the 1960s with Mao in China. It's changing our traditions, our values, our norms. I mean, look at this month, June. June is Pride Month. And what is pride about? It's forcing people to celebrate a lifestyle that is contrary to what a lot of people were brought up to believe in. You know, private lives is one thing, but when they make it public and start to impose it upon others, it's very similar to what happened during Mao's Cultural Revolution.
Well, let's take it back, because I think we need to talk about this Marxism that's taken off in America. Let's go back to 1843. You had sent me a letter that Karl Marx had written. Explain that to everybody.
This was a letter that Marx had written to a colleague, a gentleman named Ruge. And this was in 1843, and it was published in 1844 in a journal that Marx created in Paris. It's because he was exiled from Germany, and a lot of the stuff that he was publishing at the time was being censored. But the journal, which had one issue, the Deutsche Französische Jahrbücher, published this letter and a lot of other material from Hegel and others that were basically pushing this idea of the need to be critical of everything. In fact, a quote in that letter from Marx, he said, "Now philosophy has become mundane, and the most striking proof of this is that philosophical consciousness itself has been drawn into the torment of the struggle." And this was the struggle to construct a future, a utopian future. And he talked about the ruthless criticism of all that exists. And that was sort of the zeitgeist, so to speak, that inspired Marxists in Germany that formed what was called the Frankfurt School. And it was really more social theory, that sort of thing. They were Marxists, and they were communist Marxists. And when Hitler was coming to power, which was another form of socialism, and they were in competition with Marxism, they emigrated from Germany to the United States. So this was in the 1930s. People like Max Horkheimer, Adorno, Eric Fromm, a pretty noted philosopher, and a gentleman named Herbert Marcuse. Well, they came to America to advance their theory along the lines of what Marx was writing about here in this letter to Ruge. And they realized that economic conflict, like the bourgeoisie and the proletariat, would not work in America because of its large middle class. So they had to change that conflict from economic to social and political. And so this is when they started advancing what was called critical theory. And according to Marx, this was ruthless criticism of all that exists, all of our traditions, all the inherited knowledge, such as science. He talked about taking on religion, politics, science, etc., the object of our criticism. This is 1843. Now, the Communist Manifesto, 5 years later, was more of a praxis, a how-to manual in terms of how to put all this stuff in motion. And Christine, I'll remind our viewers, this was 13 years before the American Civil War. So they were already fomenting these types of seeds of critical thinking in the minds of intellectuals at the time in Western Europe and in America itself.
Let me ask you something, Ron. What is the end goal of Marxism? I mean, do they have an end goal, or is it more just ruthless criticism?
It's very simple. Utopia, a future created by these intellectuals. But the key is the means, and the means is revolution.
In 2020, there were, I always look at T-shirts when there's demonstrations. And in 2020 in Washington, D.C., I think it was June or May, it was eruption down there. And there were revolution, nothing less. And those are connected to Bob Avakian, who's, out of the SDS in the 1960s, he's been looking for a revolution ever since. And that group of people, I mean, they just want to dismantle. They hate America. They say that they hate America, that America has never done anything good. And they want to fundamentally change it. And I keep on thinking to myself, if you hate America so much, why not just leave?
I know. Those are the contradictions that communism is known for. So they talk about peace, but really they don't mean peace. They want violence because that contributes to a revolution. They promote democracy, but they don't really want democracy. They want to make sure that the political elite at the top are creating our future for us, which is utopia. And if it requires violent and coercive means, that's part of the effort to reach their goal of utopia.
So this, when we talk about what's happening now, let's go back maybe 20 years. What were some of the steps that were being taken then to where we are today?
I would look at the fall of 2008. It's not quite 20 years. It is 20 years ago. Pretty close to it.
Close to.
The Black Congressional Caucus in Congress chartered, without any debate, the Military Leadership Diversity Commission in the fiscal year 2009 National Defense Authorization Act. Now, Christine, I will tell you that some of these members are on record of visiting Cuba and extolling the virtues of Castro and what he was doing to form a more perfect future for the people of Cuba. So that was the fall of 2008. And so that was election time for the next president. And so this commission was operating within the Department of Defense to demonstrate that they could legally discriminate and get away with it. And it's patently obvious when you look at their reports, and they're on the internet. You can Google them, Military Leadership Diversity Commission. They issued many issue papers, but their final report in March of 2011 on page 18 explicitly talks about the importance of not treating people equally, i.e. that we need to discriminate and that assimilation.
And where does that need to discriminate come from? Ron, explain to me why somebody who would look up to Martin Luther King would turn around and then say, no, we need to discriminate.
Well, that's such an important question, Christine, because that was the thesis for the commission. When they looked at the demographics of general officers and admirals, for instance, their complaint was that it didn't represent the general population proportionately. In other words, there were not enough Blacks or Hispanics or women in general officer and admiral positions. So they needed to level the playing field, so to speak, to lift people up that were minorities, to make sure that the general officer, the face of the general officer and admiral ranks represented the general population. Now, when you looked at the enlisted ranks, it exceeded the proportion of minorities in the general population. But their complaint was we didn't have enough in the at the leadership roles, at the general officer. And they say, state this, issue paper number nine, published. Issue paper number nine, they talk about this being the major justification for establishing this Military Leadership Diversity Commission.
I remember back in 2020, when people started to throw around the world, you know, white supremacy. And I thought to myself, that's such a harsh word, you know, choice of words. It's a violence. It's a violence word. It's like bigot or racist. Those are violent words.
They are
calling people names. But is part of Marxism to shock and awe with using harsh words? Is that how it comes about?
Yes, very much so. In fact, winding the clock back to the 60s now, when they were working with the Black Panthers and the Weather Underground, Students for a Democratic Society, they realized that force and violence was not going to accomplish the revolution that they were pushing. And so they leaned on Herbert Marcuse. Remember, he was with the Frankfurt School, mm-hmm. and now he was a professor at the University of California in San Diego. Herbert Marcuse started publishing stuff to really start preparing and providing the context and the justification for how they were going to transition to a more peaceful, less violent approach. And this is where they needed the slow march through the institutions, which Gramsci wrote about, mm-hmm. Italy, the slow march through the institutions, starting off with our educational systems, universities. And I'd like to, as we proceed in the interview, recommend to your viewers some really important books that talk about this. And so at the universities, and I've had the privilege of meeting Stanley Ridgely from Drexel University. He's published this book. It just came out within the year, Brutal Minds, The Dark World of the Left-Wing Brainwashing in Our Universities. It's heavily documented. He provides a lot of evidence to demonstrate how this is actually happening. And it's not so much professors, although those that are with programs like women's studies, gender studies, black studies, it's happening mostly with the student administrative services. So these are the folks that control the dormitories, and they do a lot of other things to supposedly improve the life of students on the campus. So they hold a lot of workshops and seminars and whatever. And they use a lot of mouse tactics in terms of demeaning them, taking them down, making them feel vulnerable so that they can convert them into saying diversity is our strength, things like that. So a lot of evidence in this book by Stanley Ridgely, Brutal Minds.
Does he cover the microaggression lectures?
Yep.
Because I was just recently, I did an interview with a friend of our network up in Connecticut. And he was telling me that they actually have, you know, this is in a high school and his son goes to. And he said that they have students teaching other students in the General Assembly about microaggression. So they have a club, and they teach these kids and then they teach their peers. And I said, what was your son's reaction? And he said they were all felt like they couldn't say anything once they left that lecture by their own peers because they were terrified of, quote unquote, insulting somebody.
That's exactly the way it worked in Mao's time. The children that wore the red scarves, I forget they call them the red pioneers or something like that. They indoctrinated the children, and the children then turned their own parents in and whatever. So this is very similar to Mao's Cultural Revolution in the 60s. And we're seeing it play out at our universities. And now K-12, we're seeing where a lot of our young children are being exposed to different values and traditions in America, where they're required to read books that talk about, you know, you may be a boy, but you might really be a girl. Mm-hmm. And so they're confusing these children, getting in their minds
Well, I find it to be predatory behavior if anybody tells a child not to tell mommy and daddy. So if they go to school and Billy wants to be Susie, and Susie wants to wear a dress, and there's a closet with dresses, and they can wear a dress. But then, you know, when Billy goes home, he's Billy, and you're not supposed to tell the parents. I mean, you know, that's what perverts do. They rape a kid, and they say this is our secret. So right. I mean, to me, that's kind of a red flag, because I don't think you know the parents' role is to protect their child.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. But, you know, when we go back to the Military Leadership Diversity Commission, it was apparent to me, now that I'm being introduced to a lot of this stuff, that the Department of Defense was a very lucrative target for the Marxist leftists. And so if they can establish that they can come into the Department of Defense, such a critical institution in America, and demonstrate that they can discriminate and start to teach these types of concepts to those who wear the uniform, the rest of the country was even more vulnerable. And so most of the folks have heard of a good friend of ours, Lieutenant Colonel Matthew Lohmeyer. Matthew was a below-the-zone officer. He was on his way to be a general officer. And so while he was stationed at Buckley Air Force Base here in Colorado, where I live, the base commander was mandating all these critical race theory type trainings, and it was to promote diversity, equity, and inclusion. When President Trump issued his executive order in September of 2021 to cease and desist all trainings, the base commander, a colonel.
Well, you're saying Trump or you meant Biden?
This was Trump in 2021. This is before the re-election.
Okay.
See.
It's 2020.
Yeah, 2020.
2020.
In 2020, September of 2020, the base commander says, I don't agree with that. And so here he is defying a commander-in-chief's orders and still forcing, mandating members of the military to go through these workshops and seminars, giving them required reading, such as How to Become a Racist by Ibram Kendi, and that sort of thing. So Matthew, who was an aide-de-camp to the four-star general that was the commander of the new Space Command, worked his way up the chain of command to express his concerns about this kind of training, that a lot of people were coming to him and saying, you know, this isn't right. This is dividing us. And so everybody up the chain of command, to include the four-star, said their hands were tied. They didn't disagree with Matt. They just said their hands were tied. So he files an IG complaint. And the same day, the inspector general dismissed his IG complaint. And it wasn't just Matt. It was other commanders and leaders at Buckley Air Force Base that signed on to that IG complaint. The same day the IG complaint dismissed the case, the base commander, a black colonel, came out on the one-star list. Now, this is a man who should have been court-martialed for deliberately disobeying an order of the commander-in-chief.
All right, so explain to me why somebody would think it's virtuous to push a book, How to Become a Racist. What's the value of that?
They've been indoctrinated into thinking that there's oppressors and oppressed, and that the right thing to do is to discriminate against those who've been discriminating. That's the basic message of Kendi's book, How to Become a Racist, that we need to discriminate to get over the discrimination. But yet, and this is what got me involved, Christine, and this is the irony here. On 7 July of 2020, you know, here I am hoping that they'd lift the mandates. I don't have to wear the mask anymore, so I get back on the golf course to improve my golf handicap. I mean, after all, I've earned it. I served my nation for 34 years in uniform. I served a technical think tank working counterterrorism for 5 years. I've been a university professor. I think it's time that I work on my golf handicap.
All right.
But on 7 July 2020, a classmate of mine says, Ron, did you see this video by the football coaches at the Air Force Academy? So what video? Well, it was on the front page of the Colorado Springs Gazette. And by accessing the electronic version, I could access the video. It was just 3 minutes. It was all the coaches.
And it changed your life. It changed your golf game.
Yeah. Chanting Black Lives Matter. And then they gave five examples of racial injustice, to include Jim Crow laws. Can you believe that? Jim Crow laws, mass incarcerations, redlining. And so when I saw the video, I'm thinking, this is pretty serious. You got Academy football coaches going out in such a public forum. Mm-hmm. But this message, and I could understand the sentiment after the George Floyd incident, but this was crazy with all the riots taking place across America by the BLM organization and Antifa. Mm-hmm. These are anti-American groups. So I did a little research. In 2 days, I went to the Black Lives Matter website to check them out. There was a link to an outfit called Blue Star Strategies if you want to donate. And so I dig down. Blue Star Strategies supports Democratic candidates and parties. It's a 501c3. Thinking, how do they get away with this? You know, this is.
Is Blue Star Strategies, it sounds familiar to me. Is that the PR firm that Hunter Biden contracted with?
Yes, there was. Blue Star Strategies was a consulting firm. And I think I may have misspoke on the charity. And so I will get that. I'll correct it.
Okay.
But there's an umbrella charity organization that a lot of people donate to. And just to give you an example, about 2 years ago, I saw a report. It was published by the American AMAC, where $80 billion have been collected for the Black Lives Matter effort. And mm-hmm. at that time, we were involved in Ukraine, and we had contributed $80 billion to that effort. I'm thinking, $80 billion in a international conflict here, and $80 billion, this Black Lives Matter movement. And so they provided donor sources. Banks were contributing $1 billion to this effort. And so it was all to this charity organization, which I identified. And so I put out a blog article on that, countering what the coaches were saying. And so that was 2 days later, on 9 July, I get a call from Lieutenant General retired Rod Bishop, a good friend of mine. General Bishop and I served together as action officers way back in the 1980s. Mm-hmm. He saw my blog article and asked if he could forward it to the superintendent at the academy. And I said, you know, I'd be honored. Please do. And so that night, my cell phone was humming with all these emails flying back and forth, to include a lot of retired four stars. In the bottom line, the superintendent endorsed the video. He said they cleared it through the JAG, the Judge Advocate General, and Public Affairs. He said, quite frankly, I endorse the video. That's what got us.
Was that head snapping for you?
Oh, big time. It was a huge wake-up call. We're thinking, what? How can an active duty three-star general, fighter pilot, he's flown in combat. He served during the Cold War with me. Mm-hmm. How could he buy into this kind of stuff? And so...
Do you think that people buy into it because they're afraid not to?
Yep, a lot of it. I mean, to this day, if I've been somewhat exiled. I mean, up until a year ago, I was a class president for the class of 1973 out of the Air Force Academy, which I was proud and honored to be in that leadership role. But when this thing happened with this cultural Marxism and how it had already infiltrated our beloved Air Force Academy, I realized this was something that I needed to take on. And so in a short order, General Bishop and I realized, hey, this is something that has to be stopped. And so that's how STARS came about. And
let's get into that. Let's take a break right here, Ron. And when we swing back, let's get into, as a result of this, you know, cultural revolution, you guys started STARS.
Sounds good.
You'd be forgiven if you thought our country had a reliable power grid, but we don't. The truth is, it wasn't built to last. When the next outage strikes, plug in the Grid Doctor 300 from My Patriot Supply. My Patriot Supply has helped millions of Americans prepare for emergencies. And power loss? Seriously, that's an emergency. Our failing grid means more blackouts are coming, and we've seen the signs over the last few years. Get the Grid Doctor 300 right now at my website, preparewithcdm.com. This generator lasts longer and runs stronger than the others, connects two solar panels at once, and harnesses up to 200 watts of charging power from the sun. Use it while it charges. It charges fast, too. This means no device is left behind because it has multiple ports. You can run phones, fans, CPAP machines, and even mini refrigerators. Take $50 off your Grid Doctor 300 at preparewithcdm.com. Includes fast, free shipping. That's preparewithcdm.com. preparewithcdm.com. Thank you. Contagion kit is something new. Can you tell us about that and what's in it and what it's for?
Well, the contagion kit is specifically geared towards a respiratory virus. It includes some of the medications that we've been talking about that are well known to be able to treat respiratory viruses. And importantly, it includes a nebulizer, a way to aerosolize a liquid medication so that you can breathe it into the lungs. Again, these kits are not meant to replace your doctor or a relationship with a doctor. They are not meant for you to fly solo. We have telemedicine visits available if you have any questions about the symptoms you're having. There is a booklet in there as well that supports and kind of coaches you through what symptoms you may be having from something. So these aren't meant to be a panacea to replace everything in medicine. It's a way, however, for people to feel and to be prepared, to be at the ready, to be more resilient, and to be more immune from the sorts of intrusions that we saw during COVID, where your insurance company or your own doctor or the pharmacist or the pharmacy was refusing to let people get a hold of medication.
Okay, we're back with Ron Scott. Ron, let's talk about STARS, because as a result of seeing the military change, you and General Bishop started STARS. And so explain to people what that is.
Well, STARS stands for Stand Together Against Racism and Radicalism in the Services. And we adopted a definition of radicalism from Michigan State University that has studied radicalism throughout the ages. And so they've got a great archive of documents and records. And so radicalism, their definition is an individual, a group, or an institution that advances an alternative vision or understanding of America. Radicalism. And so having served in the military for 34 years, General Bishop and I realized that what was at play was totally contrary to the founding documents that we swore an oath to support and defend. And so that was a threat. It's anti-America. People who understand the essence of those documents, our Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, that's America. That's our vision. That's how we self-govern. And that's how we became the most powerful country in the history of humankind. But yet we have forces right now that have a different vision for what America should be. And it's anti-America, pure and simple.
Do you think there's a, pardon me, a spiritual warfare element to this?
That is the root of all this, Christine. You're right. It is. It's an evil versus good competition. That's why, as an example, General Bishop and I, every time we swore the oath, we ended it with "So help me God," and so our ultimate accountability was to a supreme being. That our choices here on earth will be held accountable in the afterlife. And so a lot of what we see happening is so contrary to that notion of under God. In fact, the irony, just last week when we celebrated the 80th anniversary of D-Day, when you look at the grave sites, the American grave sites across Western Europe, they're adorned by the Christian cross and an occasional Star of David. At the time of that war, over 90% of Americans, and this is based on surveys that Gallup has been doing for decades, over 90% of Americans claimed a Christian affiliation. But yet today we hear so many people saying America's not a Christian nation. No, it's not a Christian nation. But its First Amendment was very emphatic in protecting religious freedom. And so while most of Americans were Christian over the years, you know, we've been very tolerant and open to other religions. That's America. But right now, religion is being, as Marx talked about in that 1843 letter about being ruthless criticism of all that exists, and he targets religion and science and that sort of thing. And so that's what we're up against.
We're also up against just chipping away at moral absolutes. I mean, I call it the age of nihilism, where there are no boundaries.
Right, exactly.
You know, I mean, for anybody to think that they can target somebody else's child, that's what predators do. You know, we're normalizing predatory behavior.
Normalizing predatory behavior. And Christine, on May 31, someone forwarded to me an op-ed that was published in USA Today. And this was a medical doctor, gay medical doctor, advertising how good and encouraging anal sex is. That was the essence of the op-ed.
That was the essence. This is this year in USA Today.
May 31. Explaining why more people should be doing it. This was a medical doctor. And
honest to God, you'd think.
You talk about normalizing this stuff. That's where we are right now. You know, it's not good enough.
Why would somebody think that that's appropriate to put in a paper?
It's part of this movement.
Okay, so we need, my head snaps every time I hear a story like that, because I just think to myself, you know, freezing bank accounts in Canada, I thought that would wake up the legacy media in the Western Hemisphere, but it didn't.
Well, it didn't. So Christine, on May 2 and 3, the Defense Advisory Committee on Diversity and Inclusion met for its semi-annual meeting. Now, what is this organization? We call it DACODI for short. It was the spinoff from the Military Leadership Diversity Commission. The Defense Department realized that they hadn't implemented all the recommendations from that Military Leadership Diversity Commission. So they stood up this advisory committee to figure out how they were going to implement all the remaining recommendations. And so we learned about it this past December when our webmaster, who happened to be former CIA, attended that meeting on behalf of STARS. She was the only one present from the general public, and they knew she was from STARS. And so that generated a whole cycle of exchanges between General Bishop and General Lyles, the chairman, again, who chaired the Military Leadership Diversity Commission, saying, oh, we'd like to learn more. So we had 19 individuals that had made reservations to attend the May 2nd and 3rd session in Washington, D.C. 3 days before that session, they announced, due to unforeseen circumstances, this will now only be virtual. In other words, it'll be a Zoom platform. This is after 19 individuals made airline reservations and lodging accommodations and that sort of thing. Okay, that's kind of interesting. So I have signed up to attend virtually. Some logged in and they were dropped off, to include a retired Navy admiral who let us know, hey, I don't know what happened. I logged in, all of a sudden they dropped me off. Some people weren't even able to log in. I was fortunate to be able to log in for all 2 days. And so it was really amazing what was being presented.
So tell me what were they saying? What were they pushing?
The importance of diversity and equity and what we have to do to promote that, diversity and inclusion. And so just to give you an example, on the last day, the diversity officer, chief diversity officer for the Central Intelligence Agency, gave a presentation of what they were doing to promote diversity and inclusion in the CIA.
What did they say? What are their tactics?
Well, the big takeaway for me, and by the way, folks can see this. We recorded all this stuff. It's on the STARS website. So you can see it for yourself. This chief diversity officer was explaining that when the directors advance individuals that want to be promoted into the organization or within the organization, he gets the opportunity to review all the candidates. And if they haven't demonstrated that they are doing things to advance diversity and inclusion, he drops them off the list. And if there's others within the organization that weren't advanced, that he knows are big diversity and inclusion advocates, he raises them to the list. In other words, he's got veto authority before it goes to the director of the Central Intelligence Agency.
So this is a monkey see, monkey do, monkey repeat, and then you can go up the ladder.
Exactly. But Christine, here was a real irony for me. Towards the end of that presentation, General Lyle says, well, Dr. Laurentis, who was the chief diversity officer, you know, we'd like to see you. Can you turn your video on? And so he turns his video on. It's a white male. He says, yeah, look, I'm a white male, and I still push this stuff. That made the hair on the back of my neck stand up, and I'll tell you why. F.A. Hayek, the author of The Road to Serfdom, a seminal work about Marxism and how it worked through the last century, there's a chapter called The End of Truth. And the first paragraph talks about when the social planner determines what the values are, it's not good enough that the people accept them or tolerate them. They have to internalize them to the point where when somebody says something contrary to those values, they react spontaneously. And that's why we see all the stuff that we're seeing right now, the protests, people getting canceled. It's sad. And I hate
well, to- it's it, we've become a revolting landscape socially. You know, the fact that you can't have a different idea,
right?
You can't have a discussion. Everything has to be, you know, marching in order. It's like the Stepford Wives, you know, but it's on steroids. It's there's nothing creative about it because there's no discussion.
No, there isn't. And you can't feel good about it.
Well, not only that, but I mean, what I can't figure out, in Ron, to be honest with you, I can't figure out what's the purpose of all this.
The purpose is Marxist, a utopia.
But it's not. No, people in this country are not ecstatic about what's going on. It doesn't matter. You know, it's got nothing to do with even politics anymore. It has to do with, you know, the government telling people what to do left and right.
Right. Yeah. And this is the revolution. It's anti-God. It's anti-America in terms of what America stands for in its founding documents.
Well, when I didn't know who Bob Avakian was before 2020. I mean, I went to the T-shirts, then I found out that, you know, he was with SDS and the Weathermen and everything like that back in the 60s. He's still alive. He wrote a constitution. It's called New Socialism. And I read it. And he calls it the New Socialist Constitution, and to replace the U.S. Constitution. He hates America. He thinks America is a disaster. But he also, it's very much like what Klaus Schwab is pushing out there. You know, you're not going to own anything and you're going to be happy. And I'm thinking to myself, what happened to ambition? Well, you know, and if these people are so they don't like America, well, then no one's keeping anybody from going, you know, but at the same time, I'm not, there's so much anger on the far left, and there's a lot of anger on the far right too. I mean, the extremism, you know, is, but pretty much, you know, there's a lot of people in between that don't like the extremism. At the same time, you know, it's hard for me who's non-military, and, you know, thank you for your years, your decades of service, and for doing what you're doing with General Bishop with Stars. But it's hard for me to think that the military guys are going along with this. Is it because Obama pushed it, you know, with his executive order in 2011, wanting to throw the entire federal government, and at that point, which is diversity and inclusion,
right?
But why? I would tend to think that the military guys would push back and say this has no place in the military.
Well, there's really two questions there, Christine. And the first one, Victor Davis Hanson recently came out with a short presentation that blames Obama, President Obama, for all this. I mean, even the stuff that's going on right now with President Biden.
We're in the third term of Obama.
Okay? Exactly.
Like, I mean, this is Biden's a puppet.
Exactly. And, you know, his apparent incompetencies and whatever is kind of a shield for President Obama to be working a lot of the stuff behind the scenes, which he's doing. And Victor Davis Hanson lays it out. So that's one. The other one, you're talking about our general officers. It's extremely disappointing to me. I mean, I know a lot of really super flag officers who earned the distinction of being a general or an admiral. But I also know that it's political within that system. When you get to the colonel level and above, politics are involved. And so if you're going to be, especially at the 3 and 4 star, if you're going to be nominated by the president for your 3rd or 4th star, that's political. They do a lot of vetting. Am I advancing someone who's going to be compatible and consistent with my political agenda? And so,
well, that must have been really something for Obama when he realized that he appointed Michael Flynn, and then Michael Flynn didn't agree with him on the fact that ISIS was a junior varsity.
That's another great example.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
So that's part of it. So there's a lot of these generals and admirals. I hate to say it. If I was here talking to them face to face, I'd say, you know, you traded ambition for truth, for what true faith and allegiance to our Constitution is all about. Now, I know one of my ultimate heroes is a graduate of the class of 1963 from the United States Air Force Academy, General Ron Fogelman. General Fogelman asked for early retirement when he was the chief of staff for the United States Air Force because he realized that he was no longer able to carry out his Title 10 responsibilities. When he was as the chief advocate for air power for the Air Force, when he was working with the Secretary of Defense and other members of the Department of Defense, he was getting a lot of pushback. His agenda didn't coincide with theirs. And so he was not a go-along to get-along person. So he asked Secretary Widnall, Secretary of the Air Force at the time, for early retirement out of his job. Had never been done before. And it sent a signal that he was basically protesting the situation. But
so what is this? What does this do, Ron, to the readiness? I mean, because it seems to me that in the military, you're building a team that's relying upon what, you know, that's the band of brothers and sisters, okay? I mean, they have to watch out for one another, and you don't leave anybody behind. If you have this type of training, that how does that square with readiness and safety and protection? I mean, it just seems to me it's got to be a hell of a situation inside the military and inside the academies.
It is, and those that are in command, in charge, they're either blind to the real reasons or they're being very mendacious about it. There is an impact on our readiness. We are not meeting recruiting goals, number one. And then a few months back, I read where they adjusted their end strength. Oh, we don't need this number of people anymore. We only need this amount, which reduced the recruiting gap just by lowering the end strength.
Oh, so these submarines that are pulling into Cuba, we're just supposed to ignore them and say that's not reality?
Well, yeah, that's a different story. But they're doing it now because they sense how weak the United States is. So military readiness is a huge impact. They're not able to recruit white men anymore. I mean, they're paying attention to what's happening. They see all this diversity inclusion stuff, Pride Month. They're thinking, you know, I'm a normal.
So you woke up in 2020, but when you get into the weeds of this, how far back does it go? I mean, is it 2008 when they really hit the military, or is it before then?
It's before then. In fact, the other book I was going to recommend, and by the way, I forgot to hold up Matt's book. Matt Lohmeyer, we talked about earlier,
right,
the Space Force Commander. It's a best-selling book, by the way, and I highly encourage people to read it. But another book that came out by Christopher Ruffo is probably, in my opinion, the best history of how this developed in America.
Chris has done he's done some good work. He has, America's Cultural.
And Chris was a lefty at one time. So, you know, because of all of, like you, Christine, with all your investigative journalism, whatever, now all of a sudden things are starting to look different based on facts and evidence and in a proper context to weigh them within.
My lights went on about 25 years ago when I first started covering human trafficking. I expected people on the left to really do something about it.
Mm-hmm.
And when I found out that they didn't, but people on the right were more attuned to it, it was a surprise, I must say. A surprise.
It's been operating under the radar. It's just unbelievable. So Herbert Marcuse's book here, Christopher Ruffo's book, claims, if we're gonna pin the tail on a donkey, it's Herbert Marcuse. And
that's I would tend to agree with him on that.
Yeah, and his effect really started in the 1960s. And so here he is, a professor at the University of California in San Diego, and he's teaching this stuff. And one of his prized students was Angela Davis. And so for some of the older
folks, she wants prisons to be annihilated. She doesn't want any prisons in the United States.
And she was a communist, but she was in...
She's still with us. She's on this side of the grass. You realize that?
Yes, yeah. She's a professor at one of the California universities. So Herbert Marcuse is the guy that gets the credit for this. And one of the books, when we think about Pride Month and a lot of the attacks on our sexual mores and whatever, stems from a book that he wrote called Eros and Civilization. And again, this was back in the 1960s. And so he's considered the father of the new left. And so this new socialism you're talking about, whatever, Marcuse has had a huge impact on shaping thinking along those lines. And so again, he's the one that encouraged infiltrating our institutions, our government, our schools, our universities, our courts. And so we're seeing the fruit of that, the rotten fruit of...
Well, that was, it's interesting. We've had Richard Pollack on the show, and Richard and I have known each other for decades, and he used to work at ABC News years ago. He was the executive producer of Good Morning America after I had moved on to CNN. And it's striking to me because he was part of the left back in the 60s, and he was on the street, and he was demonstrating and everything like that. And then, he had a change of heart, as he said, but he said that for those who were on the streets in the 60s, they had made a conscious decision that they were going to go into the universities. And that's where they started. Now we see more of the quote unquote social justice, in the formative years of children's lives in their schools. And that's different. We weren't raising community social activists when I was in grade school. Mm-hmm. We were going to learn languages, and we were learning math and calculus and history. But that's changed now.
Yeah, big time. And I'll tell you, for me personally, being a graduate of the United States Air Force Academy, it was the academy that really got General Bishop and me started. That was our introduction to the indoctrination that's taking place and whatever. And so we have filed 45 Freedom of Information Act requests. 45.
And with federal agencies? Or
mostly with the Air Force Academy. And so the summer of 2020, again, the football coach video and whatever, the superintendent, the day after the football coach video was released, sent a letter to the Academy family. That was July 8th, 2020, talking about systemic racism in America to include the Academy. Thus, he had directed an assessment of the extent of systemic racism at the Academy so he could update policies to stem it, with the report due to him September 18, 2020, just before he retired and handed the reins over to his successor. I filed a Freedom of Information Act for a copy of that assessment. It took a lawsuit by Judicial Watch to get a federal judge to compel the Academy to produce that report. And when they did produce it, it was 163 pages. Every page had been marked for official use only, inappropriately. They did that to shield it from the public domain. They had to strike through FOUO on all 163 pages. 52 entire pages were blank, totally redacted.
So were you able to get them unredacted?
We're still working that. And so they're still issuing, partial reports. But what we saw in the unredacted pages, there was no evidence of racism, let alone systemic racism. But what did it accomplish? What did they shield? What did they allow to happen while they blocked that from the general public? They trained 90 cadets to be diversity and inclusion officers and NCOs at all command levels, two per unit, two per 40 squadrons, two for the four groups and two at the wing level with a separate reporting channel, not through the cadet squadron commander or group commander or the air officer commanding, but a separate reporting channel to the chief diversity officer at the United States Air Force Academy. They wear a purple rope over their left shoulder to visibly signify that they are the diversity and inclusion representation at the academy.
This is horrifying to me. It sounds like the brown shirts of the 1930s.
Absolutely. Political commissars. It's exactly what's happening. They, to this day, there are still cadets roaming there at the academy with purple ropes on their arm. And for folks,
all right. So explain to me, how do they interact with their colleagues?
They're there to monitor what's being said, and every once in a while, they're supposed to provide training on microaggressions, whether you should call your mom and dad, or parents, that sort of thing.
You got to be kidding me! Grown man telling another grown man, and people being, you know, taught how to use a machine gun, and they're telling you how to talk to your parents.
Right, exactly. But just this morning, I think I mentioned before the.
I mean, in some ways, it's, you know, I wish George Carlin were alive. I wish Robin Williams were alive, because quite frankly, the fact that this is even going on is it's embarrassing.
Amen.
It's embarrassing that we're doing this to our military. It's embarrassing what we're doing to children in this country. It's a cultural revolution. It's a Marxist revolution, but it's also, you know, you just want to shake people and say, you know, get a life.
Exactly. But just this morning, Christine, I just drafted an appeal for our general counsel to sign off on, to go back to the academy to let them know we disagree with the response they provided almost 3 years later, mm-hmm. on another FOIA request. Now, this FOIA was asking about a strategic diversity and inclusion plan that had been issued in 2013. And in that plan, they had all kinds of report requirements to talk about demographics within the cadet wing, to include wing command, group command, squadron command. So the FOIA asked for copies of records of the reports that were required based on that plan. Almost 3 years later, we get a partial release. And that release provided some percentages, which was useful. But then there were other documents where they would show recommendation, and then everything after the word recommendation was blanked out. And they provided no data on demographics for wing, group, and command positions, leadership positions. And so they imposed what they said they're allowed to exempt, which we totally disagree with. They can't exempt information like that. And so we're going back with an appeal to say we expect to get answers to those questions. And so that's pending. And just for what it's worth, you know, we're working pretty closely with Judicial Watch, who has been very gracious in recognizing a lot of these abuses of power in the government, and are interested in working with us as we continue to follow up on some of these things. Real quick, in the last...
Tom and Chris are doing great work over there.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And real quick, before we get too close to the end of this, I wanted to recommend this book by Michael Waller. It just came out a couple months ago, Big Intel. Because when we think about disappointments we have with some of the institutions that have been indoctrinated like this, I can't imagine a more scary situation when the CIA has turned its work, its craftsmanship inward to the United States, and the FBI, that's supposed to be a law enforcement, that has become more of an intelligence agency or whatever, and then using that as justification to create what I would call a police state, is happening big time. And
you know, it's unfortunately for what's happening here in the United States, and we see this, you know, at every corner. It's also expanding out because with the Olympics coming up this summer in Paris, the Olympic Committee is now trying to tell reporters you cannot use the word biological man.
Yeah.
Okay, biological female. And when somebody told me this, and I hadn't seen it, but I went to their website and I actually saw it, and I thought to myself, okay, so you're going to have, you know, the BBC, NBC News, you know, and every other country covering the Olympics. And they're basically saying that, you know, change your language. And I thought to myself, okay, you know, media, are you going to push back? And I bet they don't.
No, they won't.
I mean, it's unbelievable to me that what is going on here, you know, is it, and I guess I should not be so surprised, because Biden, where during the Obama administration, Obama was the first president of the United States to ever put the word transgender into a State of the Union. That was 2015. And then he appointed a czar at State Department for LGBT. And by the time they finished it, they added the I. And then when Biden came in, he's thrown the entire federal government behind LGBTIQ+. And, you know, the corporations are getting on board with the DEI. They're branding it now. So I guess we're exporting our insanity to everybody else, our attitudes, and we're nuking what Martin Luther King and Mandela stood for.
I know.
It's just, it's incredible to me. I mean, I was the spokesperson for the 1990 USA Nelson Mandela tour, and I wish he were alive, because I think he'd tell Obama, you're crazy. This is not the way to go.
And the big difference here, Christine, is what I would call authenticity. Mm-hmm. Mandela was authentic.
Yes, he was.
To
and so core. Was Bishop Tutu.
To the core. Mm-hmm. And CNN, amazingly enough, a couple of years ago, had published an article covering the Obamas during a tour in Japan, where they were speaking to young people. And they quoted President Obama talking about, if they could, they would clone millions of Barack and Michelles. And the picture that CNN had of the president was with his nose up in the air. That was from CNN. I thought, this is really kind of amazing, because the picture was very telling in terms of someone who was extremely arrogant and perhaps a semi-god and wanted to create millions of Baracks and Michelles. That was a CNN article. But, you know, there are so many good people, Christine, that see this. They're frustrated, scared in many ways, but also they fear for their safety, their well-being. And so the left is vicious.
It's vicious, but you know what? it's better to live your life free and say what you want than be scared by these. Because most people who are bullies, I have found to be cowards underneath it all. They're basically cowards, and they're intellectually dishonest. That's the thing I think that I find hard right now, is that there's so much intellectual dishonesty.
Yeah, I agree.
It is. Well, Ron, how do people find STARS? Tell them where the website is that they can go, because, you know, you're doing good work and you're trying to save an institution, and it's not easy.
STARS.us. It's with two R's, STARRS.us. We've got a world-class website. Again, our webmaster is a former CIA counterintelligence. And so she is very, very aggressive in keeping track of what's being published out there to educate people on what's happening. Mm-hmm. And so, and we are 501c3. So obviously we could use help donation wise.
Absolutely. If you get all these lawsuits going on out there, you do need it.
Yeah, exactly.
You do need it. Well, Ron, thank you. Any closing thoughts?
America is a good country. I served it, and I still serve it, and I know many feel the same way. It's worth the fight. And that's, I just ask people, muster the courage to do what you can. There's so many different ways that we can stem this and defeat it.
Yes, we don't want anybody on the bench between now and November. Everybody's got to get off the bench and get in the game, as Mike Flynn says, get in the fight.
Amen.
All right. Ron, thank you for joining us today. And we'll talk soon.
Great. Thanks, Christine.
And thanks, everybody, for watching.